Hello, it's Tuesday, August 29th, and you're listening to Wing Radio. I'm Lisa Giuliani, and I've given Victor Thorne the day off. Today, I am so thrilled to have a very special person. I had to get a really hard, heavy hitter today for this show. We are going to be talking about evil, the study and science of evil. The book that I want to introduce you to officially is Political Ponderology by Arthur M. Lobachevsky. I hope I didn't slaughter that name. And my special guest is Laura Knight Yadchik. And she has a website, one website. Actually, she has four. But one of them is signsofthetimes.org. And I would like to welcome Laura. And first, let me just tell you a little bit about Laura. Laura has spent 30 years studying psychology, history, culture, religion, myth, and the paranormal. She worked for several years in hypnotherapy, and she has a deep working knowledge of how the human mind and brain operate. She's an historian. She's an author of several books. The first, Amazing Grace, which is an autobiography. The second, called 9/11, The Ultimate Truth, which is an unveiling of the real reasons behind 9/11. The third, The High Strangeness of Dimensions, Densities, and the Process of Alien Abduction, which gets into the differences between alien abductions and mind control, and how to distinguish between the two. The fourth is called a four-volume series called The Wave. And then this massive volume, I believe it's 867 pages, right, Laura? The Secret History of the World and How to Get Out Alive.
Yeah.
It's a radical reassessment of history, science, religion, and myth. It's the result of her search to uncover the underlying principles of reality. And I'll tell you, this book is beautiful. She sent it to me, and I haven't even been able to tackle it yet because I've been going through the Ponderology book we're going to talk about today. She's also a co-founder, along with her husband, Arkadiusz Yadchik, who I believe is a quantum physicist, correct?
Yes. He's a mathematical theoretical physicist.
Yeah, and, normal people, everyday people call him a genius. But anyway, they have four websites, Cassiopeia.org, Quantum Future Physics, Signs of the Times, and QFG Publishing. And you can, I guess, find links to those on the Signs of the Times website, which we have linked to on Wing TV. Laura and Ark have also founded Quantum Future Group, Inc., which is a nonprofit in California which supports alternative and scientific research. They sit on the boards of several successful companies around the world, which are based on the principles of networking, which they espouse in their work. And I'll tell you, I'm so glad I met this woman because we all think that we are aware and awake and enlightened in these political conspiracy circles and in the 9/11 truth movement and in the patriot community. And until you read this book, Political Ponderology, and talk to the people who have studied this, you realize that you don't know anything. So I'd like to welcome Laura Knight Yadchik to Wing TV. Hi, Laura.
Thanks, Lisa. Gee, that's a hard act to follow. I don't know what to say.
Oh, I've never seen an instance where you don't know what to say. I fall into that trap much more. Now, Laura, we talk a lot about, people are always asking, what can we do? And saying that we need to strike the root of what's going on in the world politically and within, you know, the whole 9/11 truth effort and in the patriot community and what's going on in America. Are we striking the root, or are we more or less hacking at the leaves? Because your husband, Ark, came up with a really good thing or way to describe this, that we need to go after the element that birthed the problem. And the element that birthed the problem is the problem is evil. And we don't really hear anybody talking about evil or studying it or addressing it in any way. And also, psychopaths. Right?
That's by design, of course, because at the root of evil, and evil is something that I have studied for probably the last 30 years, because, you know, my initial question was, you know, why do bad things happen to good people? If God is a good God, you know, why is the world the way it is? You know, the usual existential questions that many seekers of answers ask, and most of them get diverted right away by the system itself, which posits at the earliest layers of inquiry that if you ask questions about these things, that you will become become part of it, that if you look at it too long, it'll look back at you and take over you. But, you know, if you just think in more mundane terms, one of the first rules of warfare, and it is a war, is know your enemy. How can you know what you're fighting against if you don't know every detail about it and how to combat it? So, you know, right away they have put a fence around the study of this by saying, if you think about it, if you ask about it, if you concentrate on it even, you know, then it'll become real. And that is absolutely not the case, because, you know, for all the years that those ideas have been promoted, that not to think or talk or inquire about evil, it has done nothing but grow and grow and grow. And there's, you know, there's, of course, the old saying that the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing.
Right.
Which was attributed to Edmund Burke, an Irishman who was a member of the British Parliament. But the point is that what he was saying was absolutely true, and you can do nothing about it if you don't understand it, if you don't know what it is. And most people think it's, you know, they ascribe it to some esoteric thing that you can think away. And Andrew Lobachevsky has made it quite clear that evil, as we experience it and understand it in our world, is not necessarily some esoteric or ephemeral force of you know, something like demons or witches, etc. It actually erupts into our reality from very prosaic and causes that can be understood if it is approached in the proper way, you know, the way of a naturalist who is seeking to study something that is a natural part of our reality. That evil erupts into our world from psychological deviance.
Mm-hmm.
And psychological deviance can be both acquired and it can also be inherited. There can be genetic psychological deviance, and they're called psychopaths in our society.
Right. Now, we know mostly we see pictured on TV and in film and whatnot the violent psychopaths, people, as you used an example, Hannibal Lecter from Silence of the Lambs. Those are the ones portrayed in film that the public gets to see. But there is a larger group of psychopaths, the nonviolent psychopaths. That's my understanding, right? Am I right?
That's exactly correct. And that's another one of the fences that has mm-hmm. been put around the study, the confusion of the issue. And it's been done deliberately. The idea of psychopathy as being the, you know, the barely restrained maniac, and who's not really barely restrained because he comes unleashed every once in a while, you know, Hannibal Lecter, and then there are, you know, things like Psycho, you know, the guy with the shower scene,
uh-huh.
and various other things. But these types, what are called the criminal types, are really failures. They are psychopathic failures because they fail because they have broken their cover. They have
They've been busted, right.
They have been captured. They have been submitted to study. And this is another problem because most of the earlier studies of psychopathy were, in fact, those who had been failures. They were captured. They broke the law. They did something so violent, so reprehensible that they were apprehended. So the nonviolent psychopaths were about the violent type.
Uh-huh.
Then Hervey Cleckley came along and wrote his seminal work, The Mask of Sanity, which is out of print, by the way, and we contacted the company about getting a new publication or a new edition, and it is pretty well established that there is no intention ever to republish this work, so what copies are available are pretty much all there is.
Wow.
So, but anyhow, his study dealt with another layer of psychopaths, which was mostly subcriminal. They just committed petty crimes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, they were just put in hospitals by their families or their friends or under circumstances that were quite different from someone who had committed a violent crime. So he had a whole other level of psychopaths to examine, study, and work with. So he wrote his book with, you know, extremely detailed case histories that were taken not just in the psychopath, because of course you can't take a case history from a psychopath, because one of the chief characteristics of a psychopath is the fact that they, you know, they lie.
Right.
So he took these case histories, he would get their version of everything, then he would interview all their family members, everyone who had ever known them, their victims, etc., etc., and come up with a more complete picture of who and what this type of individual was. In more recent times, there have been other books. For example, Martha Stout, who wrote The Sociopath Next Door, and I'm going to try to avoid the controversy over whether the word sociopath or psychopath is the appropriate one. I would say psychopath is the appropriate word, and sociopath is just part of the confusion process. But Martha Stout worked with the victims of psychopaths, and these were the people who had been, in relationships with them and who had been impacted in their lives by sub-criminal psychopaths. That is, psychopaths who never did anything illegal that for which they were caught. Now, you can't say that they never did anything illegal because they constantly do things, and they do things that are terribly immoral, you know, by any standards. So she was able to put together another picture of another level of psychopathy based on the case histories that she took about them through their victims. And it wasn't just, you know, one person saying, well, he did this, he did that. It was a more comprehensive process than that because, you know, she did follow up on these things and collect actual information. So then there was another more recent study done at a university by a group of researchers who had devised a questionnaire that was able to extract certain information about a broad population of university students, and they came up with the startling result that about 25% of students in a university exhibited a certain profile of psychopathic personality, and yet they were what you would consider to be, you know, law-abiding, going to a university, getting a degree, planning a career. And then, of course, that meshed with what Keckley had pointed out, that there were psychopaths, doctors, judges, lawyers, politicians, because he was able to extrapolate what he observed about these people that were his patients to a wider population of human beings and to notice that their behaviors matched.
So there's actually more of them among us than we might even realize. Let me ask you this. What is the difference between a psychopath and a non-psychopath? What is the one thing, well, there's probably a lot of things, but the major thing that differentiates a psychopath from a non-psychopath?
Oh, that's pretty easy. It's conscience.
They don't have one, right?
A psychopath simply doesn't have one. And this is one of the most difficult things for a normal human being who has a conscience to comprehend. A psychopath doesn't have one. Now, whether this lack of conscience is an esoteric thing or whether it is a brain dysfunction, you know, it's still up in the air. But the fact is that brain scans have been done of people who have been diagnosed as psychopaths, and their brain scans do not even look like normal human brain scans. So obviously their brains function quite differently. Lobachevsky, of course, has a theory for it. You know, he talks at some length about the substratum of the human being, the human psychology, and that there is an instinctive substratum, which in normal human beings, you know, connects us with other people through, you know, long evolution or whatever, you know, cause you might want to ascribe to it. Normal human beings, and here I use the word normal in a very specific context as meaning somebody who has a conscience as opposed to somebody who doesn't. I mean, there are a lot of people who have consciences who we would clearly say, well, they're really not normal. That's generally due to, you know, some acquired deficiencies or they've been psychologically abused or whatever. So, you know, let's be specific about this term normal. It means somebody who has the ability to empathize with another human being as opposed to someone who does not.
I noticed in my reading that the psychopathic person, they don't feel the emotions the way we do. They can simulate the language of emotion so that they can connect with other people. It's like, who was it? I don't know who said it. Maybe Ark said it, your husband, or maybe it was Lobachevsky. They anchor into a person's head, into their mind, into their brain.
Through the use of their words, yes. Yes, it's the problem with conscience comes back because the ability to empathize seems to be based on spatio-temporal perception. That is, that you can imagine something in space and time. You can imagine a future consequence, or you can remember a past, you know, hurt that you experienced. And then if you see someone experiencing something similar to what you experienced before, you can imagine how they feel. And if you do something that brought a result into your life that was not happy in the past, you can imagine in the future that if you do it again, that a similar thing will happen. A psychopath doesn't seem to be able to do this. They have no ability to, for one thing, things do not hurt them the way they hurt us. You know, for them, you know, losing a friend or losing a mate or losing a partner or losing a job is a minor inconvenience. It only inconveniences them insofar as, well, you know, now I've got to go and find some other source of, of sex, money, food, whatever, you know. So for them, you know, the idea of losing a beloved wife because a man, for example, who, because she divorces him because he is such a jerk, you know, he may become enraged and stalk her and carry on because, you know, because he wants to reassert his power. But if she does actually remove herself completely from his reach, you know, he'll stop and he will just be enraged simply because he has lost his source. And then he will just simply look for another. He will never hurt because he has lost love. For him, love is supplying his needs.
Right.
So that's the problem. They don't seem to have this ability to abstractly understand, you know, pain and suffering and hurt, you know, either their own or anyone else's, because they don't experience it to begin with, and they can't imagine it in the past or present or future. They're no ability to connect.
This political ponderology book had a very difficult path to emergence into the public arena, and it hasn't even really been brought out into the wider public arena yet. But there were three versions of this manuscript the author describes. The first one went into the furnace just minutes prior to a raid, I guess, of his home. The second draft was sent via an American tourist to the Vatican, and nothing ever came of it. They don't know what happened to that manuscript. They never heard anything back. The third version, I guess, made it to America and was suppressed by Zbigniew Brzezinski. Very interesting. Why would Brzezinski suppress this book?
Well, that probably is somewhat self-evident, because Brzezinski is clearly part of this controlling elite.
It exposes them, doesn't it? The neocons?
It exposes them, and The book itself would be a handbook, a guide, a manual for other people, particularly even psychologists, to begin to get an inkling of exactly what they're up against in terms of dealing with the power elite. You know, you got to understand that the psychopath is a very efficient machine. I mean, just imagine not having a conscience.
So what you're saying is that they are a different type of human being.
Yeah, exactly. And Lobachevsky, and even Malloy, who is another clinical psychologist who has written extensively on psychopathy, you know, discusses the fact that there is something he actually refers to it as a reptilian nature, that the effect of the psychopath on normal human beings is similar to the effect of a snake on say a mouse or a bird, you know, that they become frozen, that there is something, maybe it has something to do with a scent. Maybe they give off an odor that reaches inside the normal human being that paralyzes their thinking processes, because, you know, there's very little that can explain how a psychopath can affect a normal human being the way they do. The most typical example that I think of when I think of this power that the psychopath has over human beings is this scene in Silence of the Lambs where they talk about how Hannibal Lecter convinced his cellmate to swallow his own tongue and thereby commit suicide. You know, through their words, they can convince people to do just about anything. They have, and it's not just the words, there is something else, something that is hard to reach, hard to get to, and Malloy refers to it specifically as a has an almost reptilian quality that is quite frightening.
I got a lot out of this book. This is a book that you have to read in total quiet and really concentrate, and you have to read it more than once to really internalize, and I'm still internalizing what's going on in this book. But he says in this book, this is my understanding, evil is contagious, that it infects like an epidemic. It spreads like an epidemic to the people around it. So it can affect one other person or a small group or an entire population. And I was reading something else by this François de Bernard in The New Nero. I guess it was published in Haaretz, March of 2003. And he said this, "The U.S. has become a pathocracy, a regime neurotic in essence, the leaders of which are quite simply psychopaths." And I was thinking about this, all of this, you know, how we're trying to expose 9/11 truth. And we wonder, with all of this information that's been coming out in the mainstream, at the lack of outrage among the population that watches this, the mainstream everyday Joe Q citizen. And I was thinking, if we are raised in a culture and a society that's been designed by psychopaths, we're more desensitized to evil, and we're actually being conditioned to embrace it, aren't we?
Well, sure, and look at the source of that.
Do we recognize it, then?
A subject I don't want to go into too deeply here, but the source of that is the so-called Judeo-Christian ethic, where you have a God of the Old Testament who, on the one hand, says, love all your neighbors, and then turns right around and reverses that decree and says, you know, destroy everybody and leave nothing breathing. So, you know, how can you have a normal human culture where people care for each other and connect with each other when you have such a schizophrenic view of the world? It's impossible.
Well, let me ask you this, Laura. if we are raised in this conditioned culture that's been designed by psychopaths, then how far away from having a conscience is the population at large?
Well, I would say that their conscience has been perverted. You know, there are things called conversive thinking, paramoralisms, and so on. You know, there's some extreme examples of what is paramoralistic behavior. Everybody knows that some things are moral and immoral. I mean, you know, okay, let's take that as a given. And, for example, the abuse of children is considered by nearly all cultures to be immoral.
Mm-hmm.
And from time immemorial, you know, sex with children, you know, very small children, has been considered to be immoral. And yet, there are groups of people who can paramoralistically convince other groups of people that abusing a child is a good thing. For example, some cults that may talk about demon possession. Okay, so the child is behaving a certain way. Maybe the child has a psychological disorder. Maybe the child has a physical disorder. But the child acts in a certain way, and maybe even is disobedient. And so the child is demon-possessed, and they beat the child to death, and they justify this as being a moral action.
Mm-hmm.
And that is basically a paramoralism, where you justify any ad hoc thing you want to do by giving it a moralistic explanation. And this is so typical of our society, you know, either you're with us or against us,
right.
is a paramoralism. If you're against us, then, you know, you are with the terrorists. And that is so absurd a paramoralism that it hardly needs to be described, but there it is, and people believe in it because they understand, you know, that things are moral or they're immoral, and a good psychopath can convince them that anything is moral. And there's even a more recent example. There was an article in the paper the other day that there are these groups that are now saying, they're now trying to convince society that sex with children is okay.
Yeah.
That it's good for them, that they like it.
The the mainstream media conditions people to sort of accept evil as a regular everyday thing. It's normal, that it's normal. And we see examples of this, too, in the alternative media, where people have actually told me, We should embrace the bad guys along with the good guys, because all that really matters is that we unite to fight the New World Order. And my argument was, how can we fight the evil if we embrace the evil? Don't we become the evil if we embrace the evil?
Well, there's a problem there, too. And the problem is that if any group tries to go against a psychopathic, shall we say, organization, and they have within their own membership individuals who are subject to psychopathic manipulations, you know, they will immediately fall into trouble, because those individuals who are subject to being paralyzed by the stare of the psychopath, or by the scent of the psychopath, and who is subject to being converted by their paramoralisms or their conversive thinking, you know, they will then begin to do what Lobachevsky calls ponerize the movement itself, and begin to shift it this way and that. And it's like a ship. You know, if you set sail from, say, England, and you want to sail to Miami, and you're off course just a little bit, just, you know, like 1 or 2 degrees at the point of beginning, you may end up in New York, which is, you know, very far from your destination. And the same thing happens with any kind of group. If there are people inside who are subject to these paramoralistic insinuations and conversive thinking, they can take that group and they can take it completely off course and almost unnoticeably.
Yeah, let's get into that conversive thinking. Now, we talk a lot on our show about hypocrisy and the hypocrites in the 9/11 truth movement, and we've written a lot of exposés that point out people's hypocrisy, the so-called leaders of this truth movement. And it's interesting to also add to this that psychopaths tend to gravitate toward positions of power. They like to be the leaders and the spokesmen and the people who shape public perception and opinion. But this conversive thinking, we see evidence of this in certain spokespeople in the 9/11 movement too, don't we?
Oh, absolutely. And just for those who don't really know what conversive thinking is something that was highlighted during the so-called Cold War, the communist era. Conversive thinking is where it's a form of double talk,
right,
where words are used in a certain way, using terms but giving them opposing or twisted meanings. You know, for example, you use the term peacefulness, but you really mean appeasement, or vice versa. You can say appeasement, and you really mean peace.
This is what I wrote in my notes.
Freedom, for example, means license. We hear a lot of people who come on our forum, and when we do not permit certain behaviors, certain kinds of attacks and twisting and manipulation, they say, you know, that we are totalitarian. We do not, respect freedom of speech. Well, they don't really want freedom of speech. They want license to manipulate and twist and distort. So there's another one, traditional. Think of how the Bush administration referred to Europe, old Europe, you know, the
right,
backward.
Uh-huh.
You know, their traditional has come to mean backward. Such things as being efficient is referred to as being, you know, micromanaging, small-mindedness.
Psychopaths use conversive thinking to generate fear and terror. So we can see that being used with the Bush regime. The media does it. We also see it in the 9/11 truth circles, where they block out uncomfortable conclusions and they substitute them for more convenient conclusions. But it's not truth, is it?
Yeah. Another one is something like extraordinary rendition. You love that one?
Yeah.
Extraordinary rendition. What it really means is to kidnap someone illegally and take them somewhere and torture them. And, you know, when I was a kid, my grandmother would take pig fat, and she would render it. You know, this is where you cook it very slowly until all the fat comes out of the tissue, and then you have a liquid. You know, so you think of rendition. I mean, they're using the word rendition. They're taking something and they're squeezing it till there's no juice left in it. And in this case, it's a human being. So, I mean, this kind of use of words is very sick.
Yeah,
very sick, and it is very compelling because, you know, the ordinary person who has not been well educated, and let's face it, in the United States, most people have not been well educated. The majority of people who graduate from high school in the U.S. Are not even literate. So if you take somebody who has been deliberately dumbed down, and then you start playing with words in this way and saying, oh, it doesn't mean that, it means this. You know, they're easy prey for that kind of manipulation. So an uneducated society, which has been deliberately made so, is ripe for the plucking by a gang of psychopaths.
It should be noted, too, that psychopaths can be very charming. They can be the guy next door. They don't necessarily look evil. They don't necessarily act evil overtly. They can be your neighbor. They can be a doctor. They can be a teacher. They can be a member of the clergy. They can be your friend around the corner. It's really hard to detect them unless you start informing yourself of the study of evil. And this all ties into the whole 9/11 truth and patriot community and the alternative media. An example of a person in our 9/11 truth movement, the so-called movement, who uses paramoralisms and conversive thinking is Eric Hufschmidt.
Oh, yeah. Hufschmidt is a real...
piece of work, isn't he?
Is a real piece of work, yes, indeed. And, for example, you know, well, just one thing to keep in mind always is that psychopaths and schizoidal psychopaths, there are several types, in fact, and you would learn about all of this if you, you know, read Lobachevsky's book. They tend to accuse other people continuously, loudly, and rancorously of the very things they do themselves.
Exactly.
I mean, that's almost like a 100% rule. You can guarantee it every time.
Right. Well, and you pointed out that the cyber stalkers that have been harassing me did that also. The very things they accuse me of are the very things that they do. They accused me of being filthy and disgusting, but that's exactly what they are and what they do.
Yeah, they always accuse their victims of being, you know, exactly what they are and what they do themselves.
People seem to, they have to be very clear about one thing, and I'm glad that this was pointed out in my reading. The link between conceiving ethnic genocide, which is a major, major crime, okay, and lying to one's boss about a coworker, there's a common link there, and the common link is a lack of conscience.
Mm-hmm.
So a lack of conscience can cause a person to do something that maybe a lot of people would think is a small, minor thing, but also can create this bigger, wider, darker evil.
Yeah, and I think the American people, it's not that individually they have no conscience, it's that their conscience has been so twisted and distorted.
Corrupted.
By conversive thinking, by paramoralism. People who beat the child to death because they believe it's demon-possessed, you know, they are acting based on their conscience, but their conscience has been completely twisted and distorted. So, and most people, when they belong to any group, but even a larger group such as a society, you know, they tend to look around. The Kitty Genovese case is a good example. You know, 30-some people stood and watched this woman be murdered, and nobody did a thing.
That's
because
right.
They kept looking at each other to see what the other was going to do. Was somebody else going to do something before any of them would take action? And they evaluated their own behavior based on what they saw these other people doing or not doing.
Right, and you know, a lot of it's good that this is pointed out too in this book that conscience sometimes is a handicap because the psychos get away with a lot of the things they do because people with conscience don't want to confront them.
Yeah, because they're afraid they're going to hurt them or they're going to hurt their feelings. And you know, this is based on the fact that we've all been programmed to believe that people only exhibit problem behavior when they're troubled, you know, when they're anxious or you know, they have some problem. You know, we've been taught that people are only aggressive when they're attacked in some way. This is part of the psychopathic reality that has been imposed on us.
Mm-hmm.
So even when our instincts tell us that somebody is attacking us because they are evil for
right.
no good reason, you know, we don't readily accept that notion. We start to wonder what's bothering them. You know, what made them feel bad?
Like they didn't mean it, right?
You know, was their toast burned or something? And then people of conscience also turn that on themselves. What did I say? What did I do to hurt them? And we almost never think that they are being aggressive, they are being manipulative, mm-hmm. whatever, simply because they want to get their way to gain control over us, or in some way manipulate us. You know, we are programmed to not think that.
Well, of course, I was raised to think that all people are inherently good and that everybody has a conscience, but it turns out it's the exact opposite. These people are a different type of human being. They have no guilt. They feel no remorse, no sense of concern for others, no struggles with shame, no sense of responsibility, no empathy and love. They're not able to love. Love comes bundled in conscience, right?
For them, love is hunger for something. Money, sex, power.
Uh-huh.
And that's the thing that drives them. And, you know, the big problem, of course, is, you know, the legacy of Sigmund Freud. His theories and the theories of others who built on his work have influenced current-day psychology to the point that it's been, you know, completely twisted and distorted. And the Freudian psychology underpins, it's the foundation of many of our other scientific disciplines as well as our social institutions and enterprises. You know, it's all based on understanding, you know, on imagining that everyone has a conscience and a social responsibility just, you know, completely lays down and tries to understand and cope with people who have problems, that, you know, they will stop having problems. And if you think about it, this is the perfect cover for psychopaths.
Right.
Because then no matter what they do, they get excused.
Right.
You know, they're just neurotic.
And if we embrace the evil, at what price do we embrace it? What does it do to us?
Yeah.
But I started thinking about, like, a lot of these people on TV who get, arrested for, say, a mother killing all her children, and how they go back and forth, and they're trying to find some kind of insanity defense, you know, that there's just, she's sick. She's just a sick person. Could a lot of these people just be inherently evil people?
Well, once again, it's a little bit difficult to generalize, because in some cases it's true, in some cases it isn't. In some cases, people have been driven crazy under stress by the psychopathic reality in which they live. And this tips them over the edge, and this is how psychology is. It's the abuse of psychology by the psychopathic regime. And in another case, you know, for example, there was a movie, Small Sacrifices, about the woman who killed her children just to get a boyfriend, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this woman is a psychopath. But on the other hand, a woman who, you know, who suffers from postpartum depression and has a really horrible situation, there are cases. You have to examine each case individually, because a woman can be driven over the edge, just as a person can be engulfed in a cult and think that beating their children to death to get rid of the demon is saving the child's soul. And they may have a conscience, and it may be being done, you know, because of paramoralistic insinuation into their psychology. So, you know, you can't make, in any case, a broad general rule. And that's another evidence, believe it or not, of psychopathy: the black and white view of the world. You know,
uh-huh.
You make rules and it's this way, it's black or white. You know, the simplistic explanations for everything, without understanding the broad range of human psychology and individual cases.
Context.
Yeah, because, this is something that has emerged from the Judeo-Christian ethic also. You know, it's either black or it's white, and there's no individual understanding. But because of the fact that the human being, you know, normal human beings, and here again, I mean, human beings who have the potential conscience as opposed to those who do not.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to repeat what Ark said, because I think it's really important that we repeat it. A lot of people, or there's some people in the 9/11 truth movement, let's call it an effort. I hate that word, movement, because there's no movement. There are some people that are saying that if we just get rid of this one group of people who appear to be psychopaths, that we're going to solve the problems that are currently going on in Israel, Lebanon, and America, and throughout the world, and there we have it. That's the solution. But your husband, Ark, made a really good point, that if we just get rid of that group, the psychopaths will just reform and recreate into another group, because psychopaths gravitate toward one another, and they also do this in the 9/11 truth effort too, don't they?
Well, sure. And the 9/11 so-called truth effort movement, whatever it is a typical example of a venue in which psychopaths thrive. Because whenever there is a void of official explanation of authority, whatever, when there are big questions to be asked and answered, and the official culture does not deal with this appropriately, there are self-made impresarios or experts or whatever that move into that void and become the experts. For example, some years back there was the whole UFO thing. Well, the official culture, you know, just ridiculed it and said, no, there's no such thing, UFOs, aliens, blah, blah, blah. So this gave an opportunity for, you know, hundreds if not thousands of people, you know, to move into position and to become so-called UFO experts,
mm-hmm.
and authorities in that field. The same exact situation, and that's a really good study in order to understand the 9/11 truth movement. If you really understand what happened to so-called, you know, UFO investigation, you can see the exact same thing with 9/11. And also, it's the same thing with the JFK assassination. You know, whenever there is an obvious lie being told by the official culture, the powers that be, mm-hmm. or whatever, and they do not deal with the real pressing questions, they do not deal with the obvious discrepancies, and then they ridicule anybody who tries to do it, you have this huge gap where psychopaths can move in and become, you know, the so-called experts. Because the primary driving thing about a psychopath is gaining power over others. And
right.
all kinds of people who are born with the psychopathic genes, and do not think for a moment it's not genetic, it is a genetic condition. They see, here's an opportunity for me to climb up on top. I can become an expert in this. You know, psychology is also a field where psychopaths are attracted to. Because, you know, it's fairly easy to get a degree in psychology and become a psychologist, and you're an expert, you know. So any venue where they can move in and gain power over others, become an authority, is very attractive to the psychopath, especially if it can be done with the least amount of effort. And that basically describes the 9/11 truth movement. Then there's another problem.
Hmm.
Because, of course, if you have such an issue as 9/11, which is probably the greatest crime of this century, well, at least at this point, I think there's some other big ones coming up.
Yeah, I agree.
You have a crime, and it has been committed by psychopaths. Okay, so that's your first thing. And you have to understand that if they ever, for a moment, think that anybody's going to uncover it and, you know, make any efforts that are legitimate to remove them from power, they will do all kinds of things to prevent that from ever happening. And if people do not believe that they predicted, because they have all the money and power to buy all kinds of psychologists who will predict the public's behavior. So if people think that they did not predict that there would be a so-called 9/11 truth movement in reaction to this lack of official explanation that was sufficient and adequate for this crime, you know, think again. I mean, you are dealing with real criminals. They are going to create a so-called 9/11 truth movement, and they're going to create it from the very beginning. And they're going to create it so that it follows the lines that they want it to follow. And they're going to put people in place who are going to, you know, be very attractive, very convincing, very
spellbinders,
very compelling in their explanations. And
right.
they're going to say, you know, 99% of everything they're going to say is right. But then it's going to be like that ship going from England to Miami, you know, just one degree off course. And you're going to end up, you know, in New York.
We're also told by some of the big wigs in this 9/11 truth movement that we've got them on the run. We've got the bad guys on the run.
Oh,
and
God.
And I absolutely refute that. We don't have anybody on the run because we're not really attacking the real problem. There's a lot of finger pointing. Everybody thinks everybody else is COINTELPRO. Talk about COINTELPRO and what's going on in this 9/11 truth effort.
Well, this is something that I became aware of very early, and it actually started before 9/11. It was because I was writing about, you know, some of these genetic issues and was looking already into the problems between, you know, normal human beings and aberrant human beings. And, you know, I came immediately under attack and was accused of being an incipient cult leader, that I was trying to start a cult. Now, come on. We're talking about a housewife in Florida with five kids, you know, who has a discussion group that consists of maybe, you know, 100 members, you know, who all talk about, you know, anything under the sun, you know, and I've got this metaphysical experiment going on that was just an experiment, and it was, you know, something I was sharing and saying, hey, let's look at this. This is an experiment. Let's play with this sort of thing, you know, just because, you know, we might get some kind of inspiration out of it. And boy, wham, bam, they came down on me like gangbusters. You would not believe the crap.
And the people
and I mean,
doing
still
this.
There are websites, and it has grown even, because the more I write about psychopathy, the more I, you know, expose the true nature of this genetic problem that we're facing in our world, you know, the more I mean, there are entire websites devoted to defaming me. And once again, they do just
I can relate.
You. They accuse you of the very things they do themselves. I was accused of being psychologically deficient. I was accused of, you know, fraud, of theft, of starting a cult, etc. All of the things that the people who were accusing me of these things wanted to do themselves and were themselves. So it's...
Who were you a threat to? Who are these people? Because I really want people to understand that this is related to well-known people in the alternative media, like Jeff Rentz, right?
Yeah, he is associated with the same group of people, you know, who went after me, and he himself actually published defamatory material about me.
Join the club.
I think that the big threat, and it has always been the big threat, is, you know, the direction I'm taking, which is to understand the nature of evil. They do not, absolutely do not want anybody to study and understand the nature of evil. This is absolutely forbidden, because if you come up with any real answers, such as we have, you know, you must be destroyed. You must be defamed.
Because
and defamation, of course, is the main way of destroying someone. They don't want to make a martyr out of me. You know, they're not going to come and arrest me and taser me. Because if they arrested and tasered me, that would give validity to my, you know, what I write. You know,
right.
Instead, they want to defame me. They want to ridicule me. They want to marginalize me in all of the ways, you know, that are culturally accepted. You know, paramoralisms and conversive thinking and so on and so forth.
You and I are like lightning rods, aren't we?
Oh, yeah.
Why?
I mean, it's quite amazing to see how it works. But, you know, I can guarantee you that, you know, anybody who gets martyred ain't got a clue.
So, like Alex Jones having his little incident at the Canadian border on behalf of, what was it, orchestrated by the Bilderberg Group?
All that does is attract attention to the wrong issue. I mean, the real issue is genetic psychopathy. This is what they do not want people to know and understand.
And we don't see anybody talking about it, and it's the crux issue. If we just get rid of one group of people, for instance, a lot of people in the 9/11 truth movement think if we just get Bush and Cheney out of office
we're
going to have a whole different country here. But that's
and
not
that,
true.
That is their typical strategy.
Uh-huh.
If they figure out that people are finally, you know, getting a clue about something, they will sacrifice some of their own. And then they will present themselves as the saviors, you know, the new strong man who's going to step in and clean everything up, and he will be just as psychopathic as the others. Because unless and until you understand, it has nothing to do with groups, it has nothing to do with nationalities, it has nothing to do with, you know, specifically religions or with, you know, with politics or, you know, any of those kinds of divisions. It has to do with a genetic malformation,
right.
A genetic substratum of reality that is. You know, completely deviant, completely different, and it occurs in any and all. Some groups, of course, do have a greater percentage, you know, for a number of reasons. You know, like, for example, if they've been isolated in ghettos, you know, for, you know, hundreds of years and intermarried and so forth, they're going to produce more psychopaths.
Yeah, well, if they've been exposed to more evil, then they would be worse. The let's get back for a second, though, to the COINTELPRO, because we've been talking about this for a long time, how certain groups that promote themselves as at the forefront of 9/11 truth, they deliberately steer people away from truth. They get them to engage in meaningless activities like this UN prance they had last September 11th in New York City, where nobody really cared that they were even there. It was a Sunday. Everything was closed, and they accomplished nothing. Rather than, you know, being at the emotional epicenter, which was ground zero, they were all, like, walking around in circles at the UN doing nothing. They get activists to waste their time, essentially. And we try to point this out to people. These are, like, COINTELPRO tactics, right?
Absolutely. And if somebody really wants to know how to survive these things, the first thing they need to do is they need to read Ponerology. And they need to really get a good grip on the types of individuals, how conversive thinking is used, how paramoralisms are used to divert and deviate people. You know, I've written numerous articles on it, and they need to understand, you know, the exact parameters of it, and they need to become very shrewd and very psychologically educated.
Skilled. Well, we need to inform our consciences in order to inoculate ourselves against these types of people, right?
Yeah. Well, and I mean, let me give you an example. Counterintelligence, you know, COINTELPRO. The counterintelligence program is supposedly was created to vector social ideology. Any group back in the 70s that was promoting, you know, ideas of peace and brotherhood and, you know, no wars and let's all get together and understand, you know, ecology, let's be kind to the planet, you know, anything that was positive and good had to be vectored. And what they did was, you know, they would put their agents, and believe me, these agents are really well trained, and they're generally taken from universities and gotten at a very young age when they're impressionable and they can work on them, and then they become, you know, totally covert Manchurian type agents, and they go into a group and they can become leaders, movers and shakers. And I would really be suspicious of extremely young people who have gotten into this movement, you know, at a very young age.
And there seems to be a lot of those. Yeah, there seems to be quite a
lot
of them.
Like Alex Jones and Christopher Boleyn, you know, they both came into it, you know, like at very young ages. So that right there is suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
But they get them and they put them in the groups and they begin to use paramoralistic and conversive thinking, and they infect the group from the inside. And at the same time, they may find somebody in the group who is already psychologically deviant, you know, who leaves the group because they can't be in charge, or they, you know, or they aren't getting full credit for this or that, you know, so they have some kind of deviation already, some kind of personality problems because of the way they were brought up. And they can use them to, you know, tell lies about the group, or they can, you know, create entire disruptions in any kind of group by simply their knowledge of psychology. And this is something that people really need to understand. The other side has unlimited resources. They have the best psychologists and psychiatrists and motivation masters that money can buy to study how to do this.
Exactly.
And if we do not
undertake
to study the matter ourselves, we are helpless against them, completely helpless.
Right, and we'll never have them on the run if we don't arm ourselves with the best tool there is. And feeding them emotional responses is giving them what they want. They want to elicit an emotional response, so it's best to try to not react emotionally to their tactics. And the only way you can learn how to do that is to really study up on this very dangerous science, right?
Yeah, and the only remedy is knowledge and awareness, and also working on yourself to make yourself immune to what they can do to you. For example, Lobachevsky tells the story of the first time he was arrested by the secret police. Well, you know, he was young, and they were just starting their researches and so forth into this subject. And because he had never been exposed directly to such violent and aggressive behavior, you know, they were easily able to reduce him to, you know, a blithering puddle of jello. Well, you know, after many, many more experiences of exposing himself to the shocking behavior, to the shocking realizations of what kind of human beings, you know, he was actually dealing with, you know, 15 years or more later, he was arrested again, and he was able to stand there and look them coolly in the eye and say, you know, basically, you know, hey, you've got a serious problem. And they were so taken aback by their inability to frighten him,
mm-hmm.
they actually let him go.
Huh.
So, you know, people think that, you know, looking at this sort of thing, dealing with this thing, studying this thing, knowing about this thing, you know, can make you evil. No, 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 no. It does the exact opposite. It inoculates you against it.
It empowers
you. Studying psychopathy is the same thing as studying something out in nature. I mean, you can learn a lot about crocodiles by studying that. You don't want to live with them. You don't want to sleep with them. You don't want to be with them. But you need to learn about them in order to know what kind of habitat they prefer, you know, what their habits are, what their behaviors are, so that you can avoid being eaten by a crocodile.
Yeah, I like how you guys pointed out, too, that in the 50 years prior to 9/11, America experienced good times, and there were several generations of children born during that time, and the ones that were born at the beginning of that time now want to reap the benefits of all they've accumulated. There's been so much focus on enjoying the good times that it's affected people's abilities to process things critically and think objectively, and so that's sort of compromised in good times as opposed to bad times. And then when bad times hit, they're overwhelmed with evil, and they have to do they have to exert more mental effort to get themselves out of these various situations and to get away from the evil, right?
Well, this is true, because when anybody is living in a society that's at peace and there's plenty and there are jobs and you can make money and you can have, you know, the proverbial house with, you know, 3 bedrooms, 2.5 children, 2 cars, you know, annual vacation, swimming pool, etc. You know, your life is so enjoyable, and you go to movies and you go out to dinner and you go dancing and you watch entertaining plays, you go to the ballet, etc., etc. You don't spend a whole lot of time being concerned with psychological abnormality, and you spend an awful lot of time, you know, entertaining yourself, you know, getting things more and better. You want the best vacuum cleaner. You want the top-end washing machine. You want, you know, the bread machine, the microwave, you know, the full-wall television, et cetera, et cetera. So you're pretty well occupied with getting all these toys to entertain yourself. And if your family is, you know, relatively stable, you know, you're not going to be concerned with psychological deviance and learning about people who lie. Once in a while, those things impinge on your lives. You know, you may have a boss or, you know, who treats you badly, but you find another job. It's okay.
In
or
other
you
words,
may have a relative who acts whacked out, and there may be a family uproar over that. But by and large, you know, you go through your entire life, and your children grow up in their entire lives, you know, in a society based on everything being more or less okay. And you never stop to think that your society, which is based on, you know, this consumer modality, is existing that way because behind the scenes, your country, your government is exploiting
other
nations, taking their resources for, you know, pennies on the dollar, using small children to make your tennis shoes and your sundresses and your bathing suits, you know, for barely enough to live on, and that you have all of these consumer goods because your government is taking advantage of other people. You don't know that.
Right. Well, we become so preoccupied with the self and accumulating for the self that we're not able to read the environment and other people around us during good times.
Yeah, so you grow up in a total void of any kind of understanding of, you know, evil, the nature of evil. Meanwhile, your own government has been, and probably always has been, taken over by such individuals, and, you know, they rob Peter to pay Paul, and they you know, do so many evil things in different places that eventually all that comes home to roost on top of you.
Right, but meanwhile, you can't recognize the evil.
You're plunged into a situation where it becomes overt, because when it starts coming home to roost for them, then they start putting pressure on the layers below, which is the average person. You know, you're either with us or against us, you know. Then you're in a situation where you are completely unable to comprehend what happened, how it came about, you know, and you're challenged with facing the evil that always was there under the surface.
Right, and so this is what I would say to the people out there listening to this. Many of you like to go around saying your eyes have been opened, you're enlightened, and you're aware, and I say to you, it's time for you to really open your eyes and stop keeping reality at a distance. You have to start learning about this study of evil. You have to start arming yourself with the one tool that's going to help you create the change that you constantly talk about wanting to make in the world and in our country, and to be able to expose the truth. You have to embrace knowledge and start exerting some more mental effort of your own instead of parroting back what is being told to you by people in the alternative media and the 9/11 truth community and the patriot community. You have to start doing your own thinking instead of just being repetitive. Do you agree with that, Laura?
I absolutely agree. And then there's another really important thing is, do not think that you're going to be able to discern a genetically deviant individual from anybody else. They have grown up knowing that they were different, and they have devised the most extraordinary strategies for concealing their difference and using their difference to become masters of other people.
Right, and the ones that have been exposed are the failed psychopaths. The ones that are really good at it don't get caught so easily, right?
Not only do they not get caught so easily, many of them never get caught.
Yeah.
Never, ever.
Well, this has been one of the most fascinating discussions, and we could talk about this stuff for hours and hours, but I'm sure Laura has other work to do today. But I do want to thank you, Laura, very much, and I want to have you back on again so we can talk some more. Everybody, the book is Political Ponderology. It's by Arthur Lobachevsky.
Andrew.
I called him Arthur before, too, didn't I? I'm sorry. We have this book on our website now available. I think it is the most important New World Order book ever written, probably, because it gets to the root of the problem. It doesn't hack at the leaves. And, Laura, I just want to thank you. I believe you and Henry C. edited this book, correct?
Yes.
Well, I just want to thank you and the rest of the SOT group. You're doing extraordinary work. You're doing dangerous work. And there's really very few people in this circle that are truth tellers. And you guys are part of the circle, and I just can't thank you enough.
Thank you for having me, Lisa.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
On the turning away from the pale and downtrodden and the words they say which we won't understand, don't accept that what's happening is just a case of all the suffering. Oh, you'll find that you're joining in the turning away. It's a sin that somehow light is changing to shadow and casting a shroud over all we have known. As the daytime is stirring, well,